You are listening to the Star Lores Podcast.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Why, you stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
I met a traveler from an antique land who said, "Two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them on the sand, half sunk, a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well those passions read which yet survive. Stamped on these lifeless things, the hand that mocked them and the heart that fed. And on the pedestal, these words appear. My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. Nothing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away.
Little remains of the ancient and proud civilization that had been celebrated for its strength and survival above all. Like the infinite empire before them, all that remained of the Sith were statues, cracked and buried, tombs and vast necropolises, and forbidden texts hidden and torn, and their species almost extinct, save for the rare exception or mutated slave. Their civilization now lies in ruin, and their teachings have been taken underground to occult practices, shunned and driven into the underground. But it was not always so. The Sith had once dominated the galaxy, bringing it to its knees, and built monuments of conquest and triumph before their fall into obscurity.
The First Schism. Zendor was a human male and a scion of the Kashyymyr dynasty. Long after the Jedi made contact with the Republic and left Tython for Ossus, Zendor would find himself exiled from his people, Force-sensitives who banished him for his use of the dark side. Zendor found himself among the ranks of the Jedi soon after and became a knight. The Jedi of this time had begun to practice a more rigid discipline and distance themselves from the balance of Tython. Zendor chafed at the increasing close-mindedness of the Order towards Bogan teachings. At the same time, he fell in love with another refugee, Arden Lin, whose people had been left as nomads after the destruction of their homeworld because of a war instigated by the Jedi Council. Arden was a secret follower of Palawa, a religious tradition from her people that invented the martial art Terras Kassi as a means to fight back against the Jedi. Arden taught Zendor the martial art, and after being denied permission by the Council to open an academy dedicated to the teaching of Bogan, and the darker aspects of the Force, Zendor finally broke with the Council and discreetly opened an academy on the planet of Leto to pass on these teachings anyway. Many alternative Force religions found interest in the school, increasingly being marginalized by the growing influence of Orthodox Jedi philosophy, or their own exiles found solace in the darker teachings Zendor proffered. Realizing that the increasingly dogmatic Jedi may one day come to censor the growing academy, Zendor militarized the legions of Letao and they swore they would defend their rights to learn all aspects of the Force without Jedi interference. In a preemptive strike, Zendor attacked Ossus and the Jedi. He also appealed to the Republic, accusing the Jedi of trying to subvert their democracy. The ploy failed, however, and the Republic deemed Zendor a warlord. The Jedi, for their part, summoned a Grand Master, Audrista Pina, known as the Green Blade, renowned for his skill as a warrior to fight against the legions. Master Pina warred across many worlds, defeating Zendor's forces in battle after battle. Pina finally tracked Zendor down on the planet Colymus and engaged him in combat. Zendor had once admired the Jedi general, believing him to be a free thinker like himself, and willing to explore the greater mysteries of the Force. However, for Audrista, Pina's part, he was far too rigid in the ways of the Jedi and believed them and their doctrines to be a foundational pillar of civilization. Master Pina's army proved effective due to their dedication to order and fought not as individuals but as a collective, slaying many, including famed legionnaires and Jedi renunciants Tun Bohai and Sethul Asiaj. As for the legions, they chose to fight as individuals. The idea of collectivism was an affront to their core philosophies of independence and individual freedom. Finally, Master Pina, the Green Blade, came face to face with Zendor himself and struck him down. Master Pina, however, continued his war even after the death of the legions of Letao's leaders, and hunted down his lover, Arden Lin, who had become the de facto leader of the legions. But first, Pina traveled to Letao to begin exterminating the remainder of Zendor's broken forces. While many perished in the attack, some managed to escape and flee into the dark corners of the galaxy, taking their teachings with them. To some, this vengeful crusade may appear as justification for the Legion's very existence, retroactively justifying and proving their concerns over the Jedi through their punitive quest to utterly destroy the Legions. Pina located and attacked Arden, who shielded herself with a protective talisman Zendor had given her from his homeworld. As Pina struck at her, his blade shattered, his assassination had failed, and he died when fragments of his own blade pierced him. But he was not immediately killed, and with the last of his energy, Jedi Master Pina used a Force technique and put Arden into a deep hibernative state, rendering her unconscious, but alive for thousands of years.
Seems too easy to blame everything on Zendor and the dark side. Maybe the Jedi, were partly to blame too.
Danzigoro Potts.
The Second Schism.
Three years before the time that would become known as the 100-Year Darkness, a group of Jedi, who would later be deemed Dark Jedi, began experimenting with the Force through alchemical means and discovering the ability to bend life itself to their will. They were able to mutate creatures and bind them as servants. Their motives were not singularly that of control, as they also began to seek to extend life and regenerate dead worlds. The Jedi Council had grown suspicious of these talents, feeling that they could lead to abuse, and saw them as an abomination, and issued a ban on their alchemical and life-altering pursuits. Jedi Master Ajunta Pal was one such practitioner, censured by the Council, along with other notable former Jedi, Zhoujan, Remulus Drapa, and Karnes Mure, among many others. The cadre of Dark Jedi believed that they could pursue eternal life and help the galaxy with their experimental practices. They resented the Council for banning their practice. These Force users were exiled and their teachings forbidden, however, continuing to practice their life manipulation techniques. These fallen Jedi were able to craft an army of abominable creatures, which they used to attack the rest of the Order. Thus began the period known as the 100-Year Darkness. Creatures of untold nightmares were spawned by these Dark Jedi alchemists, such as the Great and Terrible Leviathan, as well as an assortment of gnarled and mutated creatures later come to be known as Sith Spawn. Despite their abilities to create an army, the Dark Jedi could not sustain their numbers and were killed or finally forced to surrender at the last stand on the planet Korobos. Taken into custody, the Republic sought their executions for the devastation they had wrought across the galaxy, using their biological abominations. But the Jedi were not so keen, opting to exile the remaining Dark Jedi into the void of the galaxy in the hopes in their time of isolation and reverie they might see the error of their ways. Instead, the 12 banished Jedi found an uncharted world, an arid planet inhabited by a species calling themselves the Sith. Landing on the planet Korriban, using guile, trickery, and the awe the Sith had of their Force powers, the Dark Jedi exiles quickly subverted the old king, Hakagram Grosh, and anointed themselves the Lords of the Sith. Ajunta Pal, the most powerful, became the first Sith Lord, raising himself to a deity in the eyes of the Sith, whom the Dark Jedi turned into their servants and warriors, founding the Sith Empire, and conquering other close worlds such as Zyost, building their strength in secret and away from Republic space. A small sub-faction of exiles, however, against Pal's orders, went back to Republic space with an army of Sith warriors too impatient to bide their time for vengeance, and ultimately failing and serving to alert the Republic and the Jedi that the exiles were somewhere in deep space and were building their strength. For his part, Remulus Drapa, formerly the leader of the Dark Jedi fleet during the Battle of Korobos, led the premature attack on the Republic. He pursued a Jedi patrol, and the two forces had eventually become stranded on a primitive planet known as Kesh, where his descendants would become known as the Lost Tribe of the Sith. Ajunta Pal, on the other hand, continued to rule for many decades, building the strength of the Empire and biding their time when the Sith would have their revenge. Eventually succumbing to age and being buried in a massive temple tomb complex on Korriban, though his spirit endured, using dark alchemical methods to bind his spirit to the tangible world. Despite his own ego, Pal was hesitant to claim the title of Sith-Ari, chosen one of the Sith, instead prophesying that one day in the future, the Sith-Ari would reveal themselves. The old Sith Empire would continue to grow in secret for 2,000 years and ascend to a golden age, conquering over 120 worlds before facing the Republic and the Jedi again. Sorza Sin, another of the exiles, had taken to documenting these early years and formation of the Sith Empire. She had written extensively about the Sith species, culture, history, along with philosophical teachings, and as the suspected author of the Sith Code. She envied Ajunta Pal as leader. She and other members of the Sith Council still ruled and had substantial influence of their own. She was a talented alchemist and helped to craft artifacts such as the Mirror Talisman for Fellai exile Karnes Mure, which would eventually haunt the galaxy with the Rakul Plague, many millennia after their deaths. She also discovered the ability of the Dark Jedi to interbreed with the Sith and further propagate themselves.
And now, a word from our sponsors. In centuries past, when the galaxy was full of wonder, and traveling was reserved for only the most daring or the most stupid, a new form of entertainment was born: the Cabinet of Curiosities. Here, one could encounter artifacts from distant planets, unique specimens of art, natural or unnatural mysteries and wonders. Here at Kandar's Cabinet of Curiosities, one could encounter artifacts as big as a starship or as small as a lightsaber crystal. Here, you can find items of even forbidden provenance, such as the amulet of Karnas Mure, or the holocron of Zosaxon, the diary of Sorgis Sin, or the gauntlet of Crassus. Come visit the Kandar's Cabinet of Curiosities today.
Welcome aboard the Millennial Falcon. This is Christian.
And this is Jordan.
We are currently orbiting the dead world of Korriban. I thought it was a suitable location for us to kind of...
I think we've been here before.
We have, and we're here again because we're talking about it again.
I really like the dry air. It helps...
Great for your lungs.
Yeah, it helps my lungs.
All the sand. we're just here to discuss the lead up to and the beginnings of this first Sith Empire, which isn't actually fair to call it the first Sith Empire. We're going to say Sith a lot in this episode. I'm already just pre-warning you.
Sith.
Yeah. because the Sith Empire had existed prior, but was more of a limited force. And they had been the ones that were encountered by the Rakata, where they had like their uniting king, Addus. And that whole unifying myth, which we talked about in an earlier episode.
Well, this was I think we need to make a distinction. That was the
Sith species. Yes.
We're talking now more the Sith.
Yeah, so this is more, we're getting more into the territory of the Sith that we know and understand.
So this is more of a precursor to the Sith, because these are still just Dark Jedi, technically.
So this is when, what we just talked about, is when they become the first Dark Lords of the Sith as we know them. And that includes... Like, the first Dark Lord of the Sith was Ajunta Pal.
Right, yes.
Who was a human, exiled Dark Jedi. And why they call themselves Sith is actually supposed to be the lords of the Sith. They rule over the Sith.
That's
people.
Right, yeah. I'm actually going to touch on this also in the Marco Ragnos episode, but...
Which,
yeah.
For spoilers, is what we're heading to next.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do one on that, but...
Yeah. So we're just building the lead up to this point to understand... We did touch on the schisms before in passing when we were talking about the Sith philosophy, just kind of as a foundation, like one paragraph, or if you listen to our early episodes on the Sith species and the Sith.
Yeah.
A religious episode, which is like one of the very first episodes we did.
But this does, like, this is a good history because it...
Yeah, we're delving deeper into the characters.
We cover the gap of, like, why are they called the Dark Lords of the Sith, or what's the difference between a Sith and a Dark Jedi, right?
Yeah, and what even are their names?
Yeah.
But before we get there, let's backtrack a little bit and talk about the first Great Schism.
Sure.
So shortly after the Jedi... I want to flesh this out, one, for our listeners who maybe are not super familiar with the material and the content, because I know for myself as a fan, I always didn't understand what stories fit in where on the timeline, and what, when you talk about the Sith, Not so much the confusion of the species and the Dark Lords, but like when you get names like Ajanta Pal and Carnus Mure, and you hear these names later on, that we're going to talk about in the next episode, Mark Aragnos and those big names, I could never place them on a timeline. Who came first? Who was whose master? Who came after? So this is why we're kind of doing the historical breakdown, so we can give a name and where they fall on the timeline progressively.
Yeah.
So it's easier to track. So starting before that, we'll talk about the first great schism before the Sith.
Zendor.
Yes, Zendor.
Yeah, he's kind of the patron saint or the precursor to the Sith.
Yes, but he is not a Sith himself.
No, he is sort of the first, like, ideologically dark Jedi.
And split.
Yeah.
Fatally split from the Jedi Council.
But, so it's also important to remember he's not technically, like, in his ideological philosophy, he's not technically like the Rakata, who are just, they were also dark side users. He does have a philosophy. It's a Jedi philosophy,
yeah,
but it's a dark Jedi philosophy.
Which, again, if you go back to Tython, where the Jedi were, they embraced both sides of the Force, the dark and the light.
But they later rejected the dark side.
Yes, as the Jedi became more orthodox, let's say, in their worldview and more hardened against darkness. And part of that is probably because they moved from Tython.
Yeah.
Because again, if you recall in our earlier episodes, Tython itself, when the Force was out of balance, became more destructive and lethal, like earthquakes, lightning storms. They had to keep both in balance.
Yeah.
Whereas when they moved to Ossus, that no longer became such a restriction. Philosophically.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, like, it is important to, like, note that, like, Zendor is a Jedi. He's a dark Jedi.
Dark Jedi versus
his ideological lineage leads back to the Jedi or the Jedi, however you want to say it.
Yeah. He thought that the Jedi should still keep the door open to Bogan.
Right.
Again, if you recall, Bogan is the dark side.
Yeah.
This is going to get confusing. Yeah. This is why we have to talk about this, because. Yeah. Just reading it, like, you kind of forget, like, who is where and what their ideological links are. But the Jedi embrace both sides, whereas now the Jedi are embracing only the light. They're forbidding dark side, and Zendor thinks that that door should still be open.
Right.
Hence the term dark Jedi.
Yeah.
It's also interesting to note how it's not such a black and white. Zendor is a bad guy, and the Jedi Council are good guys. They've made the first Great Schism very gray.
Yeah, they didn't quite present him totally as evil.
As a villain, yeah. He just wanted to keep that ideological door open. The Jedi were more charismatic and dogmatic, I should say, in restricting their beliefs.
In some ways, Zendor was like the conservative, right? Because he was like,
because technically he's conserving the Jedi's philosophy.
Yeah, he's trying to preserve.
So maybe orthodox isn't right. Maybe Zendor is the orthodox.
It was
believer.
Like the new, like really the new, like light side only was more of a new thing, you know.
Yeah, and it should also be noted as the Jedi became more light side orientated. If you recall another episode where we talk about other Force religions and even Zendor's background, the people he hailed from. Had their own Force based religion that wasn't Jedi or Sith. It was some like unique thing for their people. Same with the followers of Palawa, who became his lover. They were also unique people. And because of the Jedi's increasingly restrictive dogma, they would maybe not directly go to war with, but start to like, no, your religion's wrong.
Yeah.
This is the true and only way. You can practice Force use.
And I kind of want to defend the Jedi a little bit because I know we sometimes
always
don't
attack them.
Well, it's more just playing the devil's advocate, right? Because they're always presented as like the good guys.
Yeah. So it's easier to take the other side.
But let's not play the devil's advocate. I think like in the universe, the dark side is like a very potent and dangerous element. And it like... put in the wrong hands and with the wrong people,
Of discipline.
That's right.
Of faith that allows for really destructive tendencies.
Probably like if you try to like step into the shoes of the people at the time. It's like you're having like your con. The problems are probably always coming from more the dark side of the force than the light side. So everyone just starts leaning more into like, no, we need to be like lean more to the light side, to the point where they believed that to bring balance to the force is to practice exclusively the light side of the force. And that is what will bring balance rather than like practicing both.
The duality piece. Yeah. And we talked about that too early on in one of our religion episodes.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree with you. But also, you start to go into this territory, which we see happen with the First Great Schism, where they become such purists that they like actually start exterminating.
Yeah.
And this has happened also in the future in the Knights of the Old Republic when we talked about the, what were they called? The Cabal or the Jedi group within the council who killed their Padawans. I forget, they had a name.
I don't remember. Yeah. Sorry.
But anyways, they killed their own Padawans to prevent a darker future.
Right.
One of them was allegedly going to, you know, fall to the dark side and usher in this age of darkness.
Right.
So when they get into the territory, or in this case where the Green Blade, that master has a hard name to say.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Pina or something.
Yeah. Master Pina for short. He essentially does that. He goes on like, okay, we're going to exterminate all the legions of Letao. And it becomes this almost like were the legions right for, you know, self-defense?
Yeah.
Preemptive self-defense.
I also like,
it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Essentially. Yeah.
I also wonder about that too. Like if you're a Jedi who practices the light side and you're on like a practically genocidal mission.
Yeah.
Is that like not like
antithetical?
Yeah.
Light side practice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it could be a whole question of like, yeah, are you actually practicing what you preach? Is that maybe a chink in the armor of the person who's claiming to have the moral authority, but using the same dirty tactics as their enemy kind of thing?
Yeah.
It's almost like true Scotsman fallacy, but legitimate.
Is it just like truly like utilitarian, like the ends justify the means?
Yeah.
That kind of seems like what it's saying there. But it seems to me that seems like someone who practices, typically who would practice the dark side, what they would do.
Yeah.
That would be, they would much more easily justify those means.
Their action, well, by any means necessary, they should take power or assert their own survival or whatever else. Yeah. Yeah, and it could be that, like I said, maybe Master Pina was wrong in how he prosecuted. Maybe they weren't wrong for like limiting the teachings, but how they went about dealing with the teachings was wrong, right?
Yeah.
There's wiggle room there. The lover of the Zendor.
Yeah.
I forgot her name there.
It was...
Arden Lynn, one, we don't know a lot about what happened to her people. It's kind of vague in the lore. It just says whatever happened to her people was the direct result of the Jedi Council. So again, like, did they prosecute them directly? Did they intervene in some other way that caused a negative outcome? But by any extent, her and her people even created the martial art Terras Cassie as a self-defense mechanism against Force users and against the Jedi because of their own actions. But anyways, Arden Lynn, we need to keep her name in the back of our minds for a while because she will pop up again in the future. If you recall through the episode, she is in this kind of like vegetative state, but I'm not going to spoil it. There's going to be a few names that will pop up again that we go through from this episode, which is why I thought we should mention them directly. Because their influence is still going to be felt millennia later. So she's one of them. But anyways, that kind of concludes the First Great Schism. So it's a more of a gray, who is right, who is wrong. Actually, before we move on from that, I do want to talk about the emphasis on individualism versus collectivism or communalism. The Jedi... under Masterpina are a lot more collectivists in their thinking and their approach and how they fight, which is related to their belief system of like a united light side of the Force. And a, if you listen back to our religious episodes, that is that disintegration of self for the collective whole, putting aside your own wants, desires, needs for the good of, in their case, in their thought process, the galaxy. Whereas Zendor believed that it was about individuality, which will eventually bleed into the Sith pursuits. But Zendor has a less dark approach to individuality. More he and his followers just wanted to be free to practice dark side techniques. So there's an interesting dynamic there where like it's essentially fundamentally a question of individuality versus communalism, which depending on whoever's listening, their own beliefs of how far one side should be subverted towards the others, right?
Yeah.
How much giving is too much giving of the self, right? To the point that you become, you cease to exist as an individual, or how much, how selfish can you be before it's wrong, right?
Yeah.
Which, again, depending on the listener's moral philosophy, might tell them something different.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, like, one thing I've always disliked about Star Wars is the framing of, like, the dark side is individualistic and the light side is, like, more, I don't know, collectivist, or like it's only about serving the good of the community, right?
Yeah.
And the individual is like a afterthought. I've never really liked that framing. I think that's that's kind of,
but is it only because of the automatic connotations of light and dark side? Is it because you're kind of stuck that being that dark is implying evil or wrong,
where
from a gray perspective, embracing both sides to some extent is actually the answer you're looking for?
That's what I think. I think the Jedi or
But that's more you putting your connotation of dark implying evil or
no,
Sith.
But I think there's like an implication.
Well, there is. I mean, throughout, admittedly, like we're talking from the foundational texts of, like, again, George Lucas trying to infuse that Buddhist teaching, right? So from that perspective, obviously, yes, individuality will be associated with something you should abstain from and get rid of and purge and become one with the universe, one with the Force, one with the community.
Yeah. And the Jedi are like always supposed to be sort of these like self-sacrificial agents who give themselves up for the greater good, right? Yeah. Like their own livelihoods are like to be second, and most of the time that works and that like makes sense, but it doesn't all the time, right? And I don't know. I don't love the framing. And even like with like the Sith later on, like the rule of two and stuff like it's like it is very hyper individualistic, right?
Yeah.
Like there can only be one.
Two, but really the focus is on you as the one master.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, and you're always supposed to like supplant your master, and it's like very self focused, right?
Yeah.
But in a bad way,
like in a hyper extreme way.
You know, it's never like self-focused, like I'm gonna improve myself and make myself better.
so again, like that's why I think Zendor's story specifically in the first Great Schism altogether is more gray, right? Like
that's
was
right.
Zendor necessarily wrong?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Did they just want to be free to practice their faith?
Yeah.
Yes, essentially. So I think it does challenge that like dark side equals bad mentality.
Yeah. Or individualism equals
well, and by extension individualism.
Yeah.
And again, you have this push and pull between different authors, right? You have like George Lucas's vision and his foundational texts and beliefs. And then you have other authors that embrace more of that both sides, and the Force of balance is light and dark balance, right? And we had this whole discussion when we talked about the religions episode, if you think back.
Right.
Because episode 4, if you want to go back and listen to that. But essentially that, you have different authors with different kind of perspectives trying to push their version of the Force, or what does light and balance actually mean or look like.
It's true.
But anyways, yeah. Moving on. Now we're talking about the Sith. So a few years later, you know, the Legions of Leto are kind of put down. There is no association with the Sith whatsoever with this first schism.
Yeah.
There's only the Jedi and the Dark Jedi.
Yeah. But they are the precursor to the coming Sith.
Yes. And again, it kind of goes back to what we're saying with that, like, individualism and wanting to practice using the dark side.
Yeah.
So years after, we have the rise of Ajunta Pall, who is a powerful force user. And this group of Dark Jedi are more concerned with manipulating life.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily for a selfish aim. And in some ways, some of them wanted to do it for the betterment of others. They're like, hey, we can resurrect dead worlds with this ability. We can extend natural lives. We can, you know, repopulate worlds and everything.
There's also even like, dare I say, like a scientific aspect to like a lot of the dark.
It's almost like the forbidden science of like, science is good.
Yeah, they just want
to
push
the boundaries. But you're not allowed to do these things.
See what's possible, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like that's sort of.
And their pursuit of knowledge. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, how far can we take this? What can we do with this? And could it be used for good effect, right?
Yeah.
Like, can we use this forbidden science to actually the betterment of the galaxy?
Yeah.
But the Jedi Council, now even more set in their ways of the light than the teachings, they see it as an affront. Life should be left alone. Like you said, it's a forbidden science now.
Yeah.
So again, Ajunta Pall and his followers resent their censure and go ahead and practice their alchemical teachings anyways. And there is a question of, what are the Jedi supposed to do? This goes for both schisms. If you issue an edict and someone just ignores you, do you just let it slide? Do you?
Well, you got to enforce it. Otherwise, it's worthless.
Right. So there are questions of like what that looks like.
Yeah.
Do they need to pull their lightsabers at that point? Is there some intermediary approach they can do that isn't necessarily, okay, it's our way or violence?
Yeah.
Right. Which again, doesn't really sound like a Jedi teaching, but.
Yeah, well, I think ultimately, well, there was like a war, and then they were like exiled.
Yeah, so it did lead to violence,
yeah.
Despite what we may think, if there were alternatives. And there may not have been. Maybe Ajunta Pall is like, I'm doing this no matter what you say.
Yeah.
And his followers and he mutated creatures, enslaved creatures, did everything. Made like really horrific, abominable creatures, which were like affronts to life itself, and dangerous creatures. The Leviathan was able to like essentially soul suck people. So then there's questions like, it's almost like a Jurassic Park, which I read the books for Jurassic Park. They're very different than the movies.
Yeah.
Robert Crichton.
Yeah.
And he likes to delve into the whole questions of like how much science is to, you know,
right,
when should we stop? And that those themes do come through the movies, but they're a lot heavier.
Ethics.
Yeah. They're a lot heavier in the book.
Yeah.
And that very much pops up here is they create these monsters and they plague the galaxy with them essentially. And, you know, eventually they lose. They're just outnumbered. There's not enough of them to keep up production. And there's not enough of them to one-on-one fight all the Jedi.
Yeah.
And the Republic wants vengeance. They just want to execute these Dark Jedi and be done with it.
Yeah.
Whereas, I guess in keeping with Jedi practice, the Jedi offer them a second chance. And they're like, no, we're just going to exile them.
Yeah.
Have them think on their sins and hopefully they come back redeemed. Little did they know. They created their most... long-term enemies.
Yep.
So this is where we encounter now the Sith.
Yeah.
So these Dark Jedi get exiled. They find Korriban. They find the Sith species.
Yeah.
And the empires that they had already erected. Again, listening to the Sith episode that we talked about back then, you hear the story of King Adas and how he united the Sith tribes and kind of brought about those initial. So that was really, truly, technically the first Sith empire.
And I believe even at this time, some of the Sith species had lived like scattered throughout the galaxy.
only, so they were pretty insular. The only exceptions are a couple that were picked up by the,
by like the Thoyor.
The Thoyor, yeah. And those like just went.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's not like they were completely unknown, but
they were pretty rare. In the galaxy at large, and the Sith kingdom and empire, as it was unknown to the Republic. It was It was dark towards the galactic community as a whole. They had their own little kind of cutout of the galaxy,
right?
And then also you did have them interact with the, Stargates.
Oh yeah,
Eternal Empire. No, Infinite, the Rakata.
Yeah.
The Rakatan Infinite Empire. Yeah. So they were involved with that, but a lot of that knowledge is lost.
They didn't have the Stargates. That was the Kwa.
Yeah, but the Rakata used them. And then eventually, yes. Well,
yeah.
A different episode for a different time. Anyways, the Sith were at war with the Rakata. The Rakata did subvert them. So they were in the past, but all this is forgotten. Like, at this point, the New Republic doesn't even remember that the Rakata existed.
Yeah.
And they're just a vague.
Well, what would that have been like? 15,000 years prior to this?
Or? I'm terrible with numbers.
Yeah, I can't remember.
But it was a long time, long enough that like it's completely forgotten.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Sith now exist kind of unknown to the Republic, to the Jedi. I'm talking the species.
Yeah.
And this is what the Dark Jedi stumble across, and then they rule over these Sith. They institute what is known as the Old Sith Empire. From the perspective of the far future.
Yeah. Now the Sith were actually like, the Sith species had a proclivity towards the dark side.
Yeah.
And, they had like magic, what they called magic, but it was just like that they used the force, mostly the dark side of the force. It didn't seem that they were like super powerful in it, and they had never really encountered, like they had encountered the Rakata like millennia before, but when like Ajanta Paul and his people came, they were like head and shoulders.
Yeah, and that's why they were almost like gods.
They were able to present themselves as like deities, you know, to them because they were so powerful.
Yeah.
In the Force compared to the
what their
the Sith
experiences were with them. Yeah, exactly.
And this gave them like an in to sort of establish themselves.
Yeah, and usurp the existing king and social structure and just insert themselves at the very top of the pyramid.
Yeah, you also got to remember, like, the Sith species was relatively primitive, like, compared to most other spacefaring species. So, yeah, it seemed like it wasn't that difficult to do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, ultimately, they became, Ajanta Paul became the new Sith Lord over the Sith, the King of the Sith, if you will, and that's where the Dark Lords of the Sith came from.
Exactly. And the beginning of the Golden Age of the Sith.
Yes. Yeah.
So Ajanta Paul kind of unites the Sith. They start conquering other worlds like Zyost. They actually move the capital to the planet of Zyost.
Yep.
And his cadre, I believe it's 12 Sith Lords.
12.
Who are the first?
It is also, it's kind of funny because it's like, there was 12 disciples and they're exiled.
They were exiled
out of the Jedi.
So the Sith are Christians of Star Wars.
It's like,
oh my god,
dark Hebrews or something.
Well, there's some Kabbalah involved. Yeah. Here. Anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never thought of that.
When I was reading that, I was like, I see what they're trying to do here.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Does Ajanta Paul come back to life after 3 days?
No, I don't think so.
I was just kidding.
He does sort of come back.
Well,
to life,
he links his soul. So this is a point I was going to make.
He does kind of resurrect. Yeah.
Of the 12 dark Jedi, now Sith Lords, the first Sith Lords, most of them, their names pop up later on in other stories and other even disassociated texts from this. So you'll have Ajanta Paul's spirit still exists. It will be encountered later in the future. The amulet of Karnesh Muir will come up again and his soul will come back.
Yeah.
Zhou Zhan, I believe, is involved. Her spirit will come back. So a lot of these early Sith Lords, and that's kind of linked to, one, their own practice of wanting to extend their lives, but lacking the ability to actually achieve immortality, the next best thing is to bind their soul to a physical object,
yeah.
either their tomb or an artifact. And in that way, they achieve a semblance of immortality, which also is totally absent, kind of jumping back to the first great schism, is not necessarily what Zendor was pursuing.
Yeah, no.
This aspect really comes up, and this whole Sith philosophy of like self-preservation of life.
I think, and I probably should read like more of the source material, but to me, I think like unlike Zendor, who still viewed himself more as a Jedi, a gentle Paul and his disciples viewed themselves as something like entirely new. Different,
yeah.
right? Like, and they really integrated the Sith species and culture into their like practice,
yeah.
right? Like,
which it's they, like they would no have adopted their practices and philosophies too.
Yeah, that's right. And it's like we're no longer Jedi, even though obviously they learned the Force from the Jedi.
From the Jedi.
But like they're like we're no longer Jedi.
Yeah.
Like we're something completely else. Different. Right.
Sith.
We're the Sith. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think this is this was like a real point of demarcation in sort of like the philosophy of the
yeah,
Sith.
And this is where even the Sith code gets written by swords
that's
of
right,
sin,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
which is even like antithetical to the Jedi code,
right?
On purpose. That's
yeah,
how they
it's
wrote
antagonistic
it.
Yeah. to the Jedi.
Yeah, and all these exiled Jedi, I should refer to them now as Sith.
Yeah,
they still have that grudge. They hate the Jedi now,
that's
and they
right,
will.
Yeah.
That hatred will pretty much endure for the remainder of the Sith's existence as a religious tradition.
Yeah.
But anyways, they essentially carve out their own niche empire in the darker reaches of the galaxy, completely unknown to the Jedi, unknown to the Republic. They enslave and capture other worlds, other species they adopt. Using their Sith magics, they're able to interbreed with the Sith species. And this happens over thousands of years. So they're
and they're also like super into one thing it seemed like became a real mainstay of what they did was imbuing objects with the Force.
Yeah.
That was like something.
It's a very strong theme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't know that I really read that with the Dark Jedi that they really did anything like that. Kind
no,
of,
they lean heavily on the alchemical
yeah,
aspects
the, yeah.
of the Sith tradition, which is the whole reason that they broke off from the Jedi to begin with.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that that's kind of their major focus on what they continue to do. They keep messing with biology. They keep messing with like matter and
yeah.
the, what's the word? When you transmuting matter and life and energy. Like,
yeah.
practicing a form of magic essentially. And again, that comes from the pursuit of trying to manipulate life and also trying to extend the life.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's, again, that comes back to the Sith.
Yeah.
Teaching.
But also even the Sith species
themselves
were, yeah, they were quite into, just objects, you know, like having a special staff or a
symbols
special, yeah, symbolic weapons and armor, right?
Yeah.
Like they were really into that. So that you kind of see these two things.
They synergize.
Like, yeah, exactly. So, which it makes their distinctiveness from the Jedi
that much stronger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so essentially, this is the beginning of the Golden Age of the Sith, which lasts for a few thousand years before they come back into contact
yeah.
with the Republic again. And when they do, they've had enough time to coalesce into this completely new belief and system and people, which is predominantly now the Sith species, just because they outnumbered their original Dark Jedi overlords.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to demarcate the
right,
Sith
yeah,
from
yeah.
the Sith now. But you do have that distinction now of pure bloods versus mixed bloods because
yeah,
they
the
would
hybrids,
have, yeah,
yeah,
they would have had some kind of alteration or interbreeding with the... They're not all humans, the Dark Jedi Exiles, but a lot of them are either human or near human.
Yeah.
They look
yeah.
pretty close.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I'm guessing, yeah, by the Sith species itself was like starting to change.
Yeah. And you'll see, you can even see in like images of them, they have really strong traits early on, like very pronounced, I don't know what you call them, like
yeah.
skin tentacles
yeah,
from their
yeah.
face, really strong bony protrusions. And then you can see like the mixed hybrid ones have like a lot
softer
features, more human looking features.
Yeah.
They still have the distinctive like little nubs or like smaller tentacles, but
and
their skin tones also are not as deep red.
So I was trying to find something on this, and maybe if someone has like read some of the source material. But I wasn't quite clear. Were they breeding with one another, or they were doing this through like sorcery? They were making hybrids.
I don't know.
Like,
yeah, I don't know if they kind of leave it vague.
Yeah,
on purpose.
To me, it seemed like when I was reading, it seemed like it was the hybrids were made through Sith sorcery. It wasn't actually like interbreeding. Like perhaps the hybrids themselves started interbreeding, but the original hybrids were like being created somehow.
Yeah. I think both. Yeah, the answer is both. Maybe. Yeah. And then also keeping in mind that the Sith were also conquering other species too. So
yeah,
what other genetic lineages they
that's right, yeah.
they bring in and tie into their own, or if they keep themselves, because they were somewhat racially supremacist.
Yeah.
So maybe they didn't, and they just kind of, but a lot of that is left vague. There isn't, it just says their empire grew or they conquered other worlds, but it doesn't give a list of worlds.
There's a lot of vagueness around this era.
Which, yeah, there's not a lot of direct stories. A lot of them are pulled from like chronological texts.
Yeah.
And then like characters like Agenda Paul is kind of retrofitted. So he actually was created as the head of a cult during like the new Jedi Order period. Yeah. But then they like retroactively insert the character in the past. And then they kind of come up with a backstory and everything there.
Okay.
So that's what makes it kind of vague, because there's no the book of Ajanta Paul story, right? It's just pulling from chronological texts or where he pops up in other lore.
Yeah.
Or where his spirit is encountered in other games or books. But
yeah.
That history lesson pretty much catches us up to where we want to be for the next episode.
Yeah, next couple episodes we'll be hanging around this era.
And
hanging around Korriban.
Yeah. There's lots of interesting tombs if we want to go tomb raiding.
Yeah, exactly.
Find some artifacts or treasures, maybe find something with a soul bound to it.
Yeah.
Can teach us some dark arts.
Yeah, be careful. You don't want to get, if you go too much off the beaten path, you'll get mauled by a Tarantatic.
Tarantatic, yeah.
Or Tarantatic, whatever.
All right. Well, I think we'll leave it here.
Peace.